Hello, everyone, and welcome to Gentle Healing Year 3. So, of course, I've been reading your journals. You guys know that. And I really think that you're doing a fabulous job. Hopefully, you all feel the same thing. And the way you might feel it is that something is changing. You know, it could be anything. It could be that you're having insights you haven't had before. It could be that you're noticing your motivation to practice is increasing. It could be that you're seeing your mind, like you're noticing tricks in the mind that you haven't noticed before. I mean, there are a large number of ways that you could be noticing something, but hopefully we've been doing this now for a little over a month, I think about 5 weeks or so. Maybe 6 weeks. So hopefully you're starting to notice that something is happening. And again, something should continue to happen. You know, when you're writing with your own inner wisdom, instead of listening to a teaching, that something really is beginning to happen. And so hopefully you're beginning to feel the effects of that in some way. Of course, I have some things that I've selected during the week to share from. But before I jump into my sharing, what I would like to do is give you all an opportunity to share. Hi, Sherry. It's good to see you. Welcome home from India. Of course, your name says Anne, but I recognize the difference between an Anne and a Sherry when I see one. Jay, are you grabbing something to share? Yeah, I thought so. He looked like he was running across the room and grabbing his journal. So I thought he must have something he wants to share. Take it away, Jay, when you're ready.
Okay, can everybody hear me? Okay, yes. Great. I've noticed that my motivation to practice has increased. I've noticed that I was looking forward to meditation and valuing it in a way I can't recall in the past. I've just felt so aware, I guess, that the presence of the mind and the thoughts as something extra beyond consciousness and awareness in a way that's so singled out. I don't think I've ever seen it like that before. So clearly, not from an intellectual standpoint, but from a real just seeing it standpoint. One thing that hit me on 139 was endeavors. I equated them to Twinkies, even though I did eat a package of Twinkies this week, personally. I compared removing thought to a wholesome meal. And I'm still reacting some here and there, but I'm noticing it's shorter. And it just seems easy to just go back into stillness and peace. I mean, it seems more accessible to me. I don't know if that's the right way of describing it, but I wouldn't say it's my 100% baseline, but maybe I moved up from 40 to 45% to maybe 70%. You know, it's definitely not sudden. It's gradual. I'm much more conscious of how I use my time. Like, what am I doing right now? What am I doing? I'm not just doing stuff to get stuff done. It's more like, how am I while I'm doing this? How am I internally? Am I at peace? You know, I'm just with myself a lot more. The resistance I have is weakening overall, I think. Also, I'd like to point out that I don't think beingness is void or blank or boring. I think beingness is, to me, really alive and a present state. It's really nice to have Shauna here to talk about all this stuff with and to just practice with. you know, I compared thought to the parasite, and it's the root of all desires. You know, it gives us the desires and then yo-yos us around with the desires right after that. You know, there was these people that died and they reported going to heaven. And one of the things they said they saw in heaven, they noticed about being in heaven for the time they were there, was that there was absolutely no thought. No one. This Christian person that had this YouTube video that shared this said there was no thought at all in heaven. None. It was all just, everyone knew what was going on. There was no thought. And this immense peace and joy and love that was there. So I think that it's an ego trick to try to say that beingness is a void, boring, uninteresting. Don't, this is ridiculous. Don't get involved with that. That's just a trick to try to hijack you.
In fact, Jay, can I add something?
Sure.
Bernadette Roberts, who awoke to reality, the first principle of God, said, compared to that, even the most beautiful things in this world are monstrous.
Wow. Wow. I was reminded of that because we didn't have our sun here in La Vida today. It was shy. The clouds were out today. And I noticed a slight change in my mind, and I'm like, wait a minute. I was placing my joy based on the fact that there was sun and that I could see the mountains. So I just stilled my mind, you know, in the vein of letting go of the beautiful stuff too, right? And then I found the joy. I came back and realized it was never left, you know. And it's, I think, another ego trap along those lines of it can be harder to look past the beauty, especially if you're surrounded with it all the time. But we had some deer that came up to the front window and stared at us about 5 inches away from our face. And so I'll just give up the mic. So.
Yeah, I'll admit it's hard to have an ugly day in La Vida. Something beautiful shows up. Was there anyone else who wanted to share?
Regina, can you hear me?
It's yes, Nancy. Who's saying that?
Nancy.
Oh, there you are. Okay, yes. Hi.
Hi. How is everybody? I'm just really happy to be in this forum with you guys, live and in person. So I have a question, Regina. I was reading some of the writings in the forum today, and I read what you wrote about having that dream of the fear of dying, and that it was triggered or influenced by that article that you saw about the mafioso who was shot, and you didn't even read the article. You just saw it, and you probably didn't even really take it in, but that night you had that dream about your fear of death. So what I'm curious about is that you had said in your writing how important it is, you know, what we expose ourselves to, whether it's the news or, you know, writing, TV, whatever. So I wasn't really sure what you meant by that, because that experience that you described, and of course it was not my experience, so that's why I'm asking you about it, but the way I understood that experience in my mind for me is that even though you didn't read the article and delve into the article, it triggered, I guess it was, I don't know if it was Nisargadatta's quote or the Supreme Yoga quote, where there's talk about, there's a quote about the grooves in the mind and some of the beliefs being latent. So yes. What was interesting about that experience that you wrote about was that it seemed to me that it triggered a deeply held belief. And I remember reading Lene's quote, writing today, where she talks about getting the root. And so that article that you happened to see, you know, helped you get to the root and, you know, and latent belief that you have about death, not only your personal belief about death, but like the collective belief that we have about the fear of dying. So I just wanted more clarification on what you wrote about, because I thought it was really fascinating. So
sure. Well, so, and one piece I didn't put in there, which is also important to know, and you're kind of edging on this, so I'll tell you, is it was about 2 days before the dream that I actually prayed to look at my fear of death. So first of all, that part of the dream was in answer to my own personal request. There was more than just one piece of clarity that came out of waking up from that dream. The dream is, for those of you who didn't read what I wrote, the dream was about two different mob families fighting in cars, kind of a car chase and shooting at each other. And I, in the dream, I had a relationship with one of the families, but I wasn't in the car. But I grabbed my gun and I started running towards in the direction that the two cars went in. And as I was getting closer, there was just this hush. You couldn't hear anything. There were a lot of people that come out of their houses because they'd heard the shooting go by. They came out of their houses, but everybody was really, really quiet. And then in the dream, I didn't go into this much detail when I was writing it, because, you know, you get tired of typing. But I could hear two people shouting at each other very, very angrily. And then you began to hear the gun battle coming back our direction. And at this point, everybody started running back into their houses. and nobody invited me into their house. And so I wanted to take a shortcut across this one guy's yard to get back to my house sooner. And he yelled at me and wouldn't let me. And in the dream, I was very polite. You know, if he doesn't want me to go through his yard, then I'm not going to go through his yard. So I started walking down the street, but you could hear the gun battle coming. And that's when the fear started to arise, because if they're just going by in cars shooting, you know, there's a good chance that I could get shot. So this fear of death started to arise. But what I did in the dream, and it was intense, but what I did in the dream was I put all of my focus on my heartbeat. My heart was just beating really rapidly. I put all of my focus on my heartbeat and my breath. And I just breathed and was aware of the fear. Breathed and was aware of the fear. That's all I did. And in that moment, when I was paying that much attention to the fear, I completely forgot the story. I wasn't thinking anymore about the fact that guns were coming towards me. I wasn't having a grievance against the guy that wouldn't let me cut across his yard. I wasn't thinking about the fact that there was a gun in my hand. I mean, just everything disappeared, and there was full focus on the heartbeat and the breathing. And then what happened, which was really interesting, was I woke up from that dream, but I didn't just wake up like I have every other dream in my life. I woke up very gradually. I felt like levels of coming out of the dream until I was completely awake. And so it was a rather amazing experience, because what I got out of that was that full concentration on, in this moment, I don't know what to call it. You know, I would say that, you know, we're taught to focus on awareness, and certainly normally that's what I would focus on. But full concentration to the point that I was completely self-aware, even if it was aware of fear and breathing, when I was completely self-aware with no awareness of story or world, that's what woke me up. So I thought that was, you know, that was the main interest in the dream for me. It really emphasized for me that being able to focus purely on awareness, being self-aware, without any other thoughts at all, it absolutely is the way to wake up. But the other thing was, what I was very aware of, and I knew that I had prayed to see the fear of death, But what I was very aware of was I would not have had that dream if I did not have a mild interest in that article. There was a mild interest. You know, I didn't read the article, but I paused. I looked at the mob guy's face. You know, there was an interest there, right? It wasn't enough to click on it and read it. But it wasn't total disinterest either. And so when I woke up the next morning and we had those particular quotes about conditioning and latent tendencies and all of that, I just realized, you know, every single aspect of that dream, I mean, I don't want to take all your time, but every single aspect of that dream, car chases, shooting each other, you know, I've seen that in movies. The street in this dream was somewhat fashioned after a street in my childhood. You know, I mean, just everything in the dream came from prior experience. And so it really hit me that, you know, what we give our attention to is a billion times more important than I think most of us realize. And notice I use the word a billion. Because what's happening, just like that entire dream was built out of things that I'd been around or experienced or gave attention to, even mild attention, there was nothing in the dream new or unique, right? It all came from prior experience. And that's exactly how this world is made too, right? There's nothing in this world that isn't coming from something that we're giving attention to. And I realized then why masters in their awakening process spent hours in meditation, focusing on awareness and not paying attention to the world. Because the more attention that's going out to the world, the more you are rebuilding the dream. Rebuilding the dream, rebuilding the dream. So what happened for me through that dream was there's just a greater understanding of how important meditation is, and even, if you can manage it, a lot of meditation. Because again, whenever our attention is outgoing, even like looking at that article, I mean, like I said, I paused long enough, they had a picture of the guy, I looked at his face, you know, I mean, there was mild interest there, and it went into the dream, right? It wouldn't have gone into the dream if I hadn't given any attention to it. There are certainly other articles that I just scrolled right on past, you know, when I was going to where I was going, right? So when we sit down and we watch TV, you know, it's kind of important what we choose to watch. You know, like it's probably okay to watch Big Bang Theory. I mean, I don't know that there's anything in Big Bang Theory that really hurts, but some of these crime shows might not be so healthy. You know, even the news might not be so healthy.
And are you saying that the crime shows aren't healthy because we take that in and then we project that out again? Yes. Into the world, and that's creation?
Yes.
Okay, so that was the main point that you were making that I wasn't clear on. I didn't fully understand.
Yes, yeah, because your interest is divine creative attention, right? Yeah. So thanks for asking that question, Nancy. And Ron, I think you wanted to share something?
Just kind of an add-on to what you were saying. You know, one of the things that really struck me this week in the readings had to do with the word mental conditioning. And for some reason that really stood out to me. So I sat with that quite a while and actually looked up bunches of different words in online dictionary just to kind of see where that would take me. And now, I think it's pretty clear from the time that we're born going forward, that is what takes place, is our mental conditioning based on the environment that we're in. And by the time we're about 15 or 16, our responses have been so um, so consistent over a period of time that they become somewhat unconscious to us. We're just automatically doing, like, we get in the car, we open the door, we sit down, adjust the seat, put in the car keys, do all these things. We don't even think about, we just do them. Someone asks what we're doing, we'd have no, we couldn't even tell them what we're doing because we just automatically do that. And I think what I'm personally becoming more sensitive to your point about what to watch, what to do, is anything that kind of reinforces part of that mental conditioning of the world and form is something that's, you know, while Paul in 1 Corinthians says, everything's allowable for me, but not everything is beneficial for me. It's probably just not beneficial because I'm starting to, again, go back, creep back, and the I'm trying to break the habit of being myself is mental conditioning. And so why tempt myself, why put myself in that kind of environment if that's where I'm going to be drawn? I'm not trying to make a judgment as to whether one particular crime show or another show should do that for everybody or whatever, just for myself. That is something that really kind of came through to me in what was being said and said this week. The other thing I've found actually happening, kind of interestingly enough, is starting at times to, as I'm going through the day, which has been the one of the bigger challenges for me, is actually almost having an observer following me throughout the day, and I'm actually the eyes of the observer watching me do what I'm doing, and totally detaching from it. There's a term that Nisargadatta uses. He doesn't call it, you know, the body; he calls it the food body, and that kind of helps me even get another piece of distance away from me not being the body. It's like, it's just food; it lives on whatever I put in it, and I eliminate half of that stuff, and that's just it's just this thing that eats food, and, you know, as a vessel. But that's been kind of interesting that I'm starting to get that sensation, and I'd like to try to stay in that space. I'm pointing toward that direction.
Yeah, thank good. You. Thank you, Ron. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Is there anyone else who would like to share? All right, then let's look at the things that I collected this week. That's what I feel like I do throughout the week now, is I collect things. One thing I wanted to look at was quote 125. And I also have here to look at the RDA journal for quote 125. So let's look at 125 first. Oh, you know what? I want to say this before I dive in, because I forgot to say this last week. I just wanted to remind you all that even though we typically do four quotes a day, we don't always do four quotes a day. And you can watch the daily update. But if some of you are a little bit behind us, which is fine, but that means that you probably need to know where to find the daily update, since you're on a different day than we are. So if you, let me go ahead and share my screen, because I'm going to be sharing it in a moment anyway. So if you're not on the same day as us, and you want to find out which quotes you're supposed to contemplate, what you can do is go to the website. Just go to Gentle Healing Daily Contemplation. And if you just go to Gentle Healing Daily Contemplation, you'll notice that the days are numbered, right? 29, 30. So all you have to do is know what day you're ready for. And then when you click on that day, that will tell you what quotes to come. In fact, notice this particular day, there was only two quotes, right? So that way, on the days when I slow you down, I'm slowing you down on purpose. I want you to, you know, spend a little more time with those quotes. So if you're only supposed to do two quotes, then, you know, that's a good idea just to do those two. So it comes out on the daily update, or you can go to Gentle Healing Daily Contemplation to find out what quotes to contemplate on a particular day. All right, so now that I said that, let me go ahead and go to my journal. And we want 125. It's hard for me to believe you guys are that far along already, but you are. Okay, so quote 125 says, "People like to argue and confuse others. They are indeed confused." So let's see what the journal said. "It is best to let each one follow his path without interference from me. Why would I correct another or state an opposing view if my view is not invited? It may be that my view is thought concept only. I need to assert my view or feel threatened, and asserting is preferred to feeling threatened. Let go of asserting. Let feeling threatened happen. What feels threatened?" And again, the quote was, "People like to argue and confuse others. They are indeed confused." So when I contemplated this, and I was really, of course, looking at myself, you know, that's who we're always looking at when we're contemplating. So I was looking at myself, and probably during this time, I was a little more likely to get into spiritual debate. And I was really looking at what happened in myself when I would get into spiritual debate. And what I noticed was, a lot of my spirituality that time was still at the belief level only. In other words, I had read it, maybe in A Course in Miracles or something, but I had not yet experienced it. But I needed it to be true because it was a part of my current identity, even my spiritual believing. And so when somebody had an opposing view, my identity felt threatened. And in order to protect my identity, I had to protect my spiritual beliefs. And so that's what would cause me to jump in and try and prove that I was right. So if you realize that, and then you realize that what we're really here to do is to let go of that false identity, then what you realize is feeling threatened, meaning your identity is threatened because your ideas are challenged, is an excellent opportunity. You know, it's an excellent opportunity. So just shut up and feel threatened. You know, shut up and rest, accept, and trust, right? This is because if you defend your beliefs, and this could be political beliefs too, you know, or spiritual beliefs or anything else, how to raise children, you know, anything else. But if you defend your beliefs, what you're really doing is clinging to the false concept self that you say you're here to let go of. So instead, let feeling threatened happen. What feels threatened, right? Rest, accept, and trust, self-inquiry, those types of things. So I think that's what I wanted to point out about 125. And again, I can't see if there's any hands up or anything. So if anybody wants to share, go ahead. In fact, I'll go ahead and stop sharing because it looks like I'm not going to be using the screen for the next few quotes. All right, so let's move on to quote 132 then. Let's see what that one was. Oh, this was a long one. "They who are established in the state of liberation, as pointed out by the scriptures, surely cross this ocean of world appearance as their consciousness flows towards the self. But they who are caught in the net of polemics, which are only productive of sorrow and confusion, forfeit their own highest good. Even in the case of the path shown by the scriptures, only one's direct experience leads one along the safest way to the supreme goal." Now I'll go ahead and look up polemics. I know I have before, but I forget words that I don't use often. I think I remember what it means, but we'll double check me. Okay, polemic. A strong verbal or written attack on someone or something. The art or practice of engaging in controversial debate or dispute. And so again, this says, they who are caught in the net of polemics, so we could say debate, which are only productive of sorrow and confusion, forfeit their own highest good. So the reason I wanted to come back and look at this particular quote is because I thought it would be fun to contemplate it together and to see what kind of clarity comes through if we contemplate it together. Now, we did this a little bit on the first night of Gentle Healing Year 3, but we didn't have a lot of time. Basically, what I want to do is read the quote again. And then I just kind of want us to all keep our eyes on the quote, pay attention to the quote, be with the quote, until somebody feels they have something to share. And just see what we get out of this quote when we do a group contemplation like that. So what I will do is read the quote again, but then we'll just be silent until somebody feels they have something to share. So again, quote 132. They who are established in the state of liberation, as pointed out by the scriptures, surely cross this ocean of world appearance as their consciousness flows towards the self. But they who are caught in the net of polemics, which are only productive of sorrow and confusion, forfeit their own highest good. Even in the case of the path shown by the scriptures, only one's direct experience leads one along the safest way to the supreme goal. And whoever feels to speak, whenever you do, just please speak up. I'll be looking at the quote. I won't be looking for your hands.
Do not assert and argue with what is.
Thank you, Jay. I'll share what's coming up for me. I'm kind of getting like a little image. And the image is a couple of people in a sailboat, and they're crossing the ocean. But as they cross the ocean, they you could say, travel right through whatever the weather is that day. Whatever experience may come across the ocean that day, whether they run into another ship and have to help people, rescue people. But everything they pass through, they let pass through them because they're more focused on their journey than on these little details that happen along the journey, right? They're crossing the ocean to get to this other shore. And one of the things that happens in my image is as they're crossing this ocean, they come across this little island where there's people arguing. They don't even glance in that direction. They just keep going. But there's a distinct contrast between the movement of the sailboat and the island staying in one place, going nowhere. And so I think that what that image is showing me is, I'm sure every one of you are very well aware of the fact that we can't avoid this world as long as this world appearance is still here. But it's the way that we be in the world and the way our focus is in the world, which is really important. With whatever experiences come up, we want to be very inward focused. We want to be very observer focused. We want to play whatever roles we have to play. And this last line where it talks about, even in the case of the path shown by the scriptures, only one's direct experience leads one along the safest way to the supreme goal. I mean, that direct experience, the way I'm hearing it, can come in a number of ways. It can come through guidance. It can come through this experience that Ron just talked about, where he has this observer following him around everywhere. It can come through meditation. But there's no way we can ever wake up by sitting back and watching a movie about somebody else's journey across the ocean. Right. We have to be the one that gets in the sailboat and takes that journey across the ocean. And again, things happen, you know, hurricanes come and, you know, all kinds of things happen as we're taking that journey. But we just deal with whatever comes up. We stay focused on the journey and we keep moving in that direction every day, every day, every day. Our job is to cross the ocean.
The other thing that I was drawn to in this quote was this natural flowing to the goal, the infinite, the absolute, that and once we're, like the term that it's used is this, once I'm in the state of liberation, which is what I pondered for quite a while, exactly what does that mean for me? It's almost like this vacuum is created that just then draws me naturally to it. It's effortless. It's just going to automatically happen. That's what stood out for me.
Thank you.
Our direct experience is what's happening right now. Right now. If we're drawn into the world, we're drawn into the past and the future. If we want to argue with someone, it's because we have a history that we feel that needs to be defended. And so it's really, to me, about staying present.
Yeah, you know, you're reminding me of, again, the dream that I had. You know, I mean, that's what happened when that fear of death came up in the dream. I was entirely present to that fear of death. Right? I didn't run from it. I went into it.
I had a gun battle dream here recently, just within the last few weeks. And it was a very short dream, but it was a very close encounter. I mean, just feet away. And the gun that I had was a tiny gun. It was like a 22 or something. And I felt totally unprotected, but I emptied that gun into some guy and there was more than one assailant. So it was a very intense dream that only lasted 2 or 3 minutes, but it really made an impact on me. So I don't know what the gun deal's about.
Well, you said it made an impact on you. What was the impact?
It was a kind of a life and death situation. And I think the fear of death is what I was relating to. It's either kill or be killed was my attitude in the dream. And
right.
So
you were trying to, correct me if I'm wrong, you were trying to avoid the death by shooting someone else.
Absolutely.
Rather than being present to your fear of death.
That's correct. And it was me or them. Okay. So, but yeah, it was really about that fear of death, about preserving my life.
Yeah. And you know, that fits again, hopefully none of us will be in a gun battle. And if we do, I doubt most of us carry guns, but you know, that fits with what we were looking at a little bit ago about even in debate, whether it's spiritual or political or how to raise children or whatever. You know, instead of debating and blindly trying to protect yourself, which is really trying to avoid feeling threatened, you know, just allow that feeling threatened. Just be present to the fact that you're feeling threatened, right? Have the direct experience of whatever is being presented. Yes, Jay.
On that note, what I've noticed, I have what you'd consider a slightly risk-taking personality by human nature. And I think that's actually helpful in the process of doing what you're experiencing but what you're talking about is because if you go into the fear, that's the opposite of what I guess a traditional mind would want to do in terms of avoiding pain, seeking pleasure. It's counterintuitive to the ego anyway, to want to go into that. And yet, what I've experienced and found is the only way to peace is through it. That's just the only way. I can't intellectualize my way out of it. When I studied dreams for so many years, I always taught that guns were a tool for change and that death is change and that if people in your dream die, those aspects of yourself are changing. If you die in a dream, it's a major change. And that's only happened like once or twice in my whole life. But what I now see is that you in the dream is your entire, what we call ego construct. That's everything. All of our beliefs, all of our conditioning, right? And I became aware of a huge conditioning piece that was part of my thinking this week. And it has to do with my quick thinking mind and how I can sometimes not fully listen and sometimes cut people off when I talk. That's happened in various situations. And that goes along with the assertiveness you were talking about. That can take different forms. So for me, what's up is, in terms of both change and the conditioning, is that conditioned quick thinking, you know, I have to be the smartest person in the room conditioning, which I saw full on and am very interested in dropping. But I also, I've had gun dreams too the last week too. So I think that's kind of a contagious gun dreams, but giving up the mic.
Yeah, thank you. Let me read this again and see if anybody else has anything they want to share. They who are established in the state of liberation, as pointed out by the scriptures, surely cross this ocean of world appearance as their consciousness flows towards the self. But they who are caught in the net of polemics, which are only productive of sorrow and confusion, forfeit their own highest good. Even in the case of the path shown by the scriptures, only one's direct experience leads one along the safest way to the supreme goal. I think we've done well discussing how important it is to be willing to directly experience whatever is presented. You know, I think that's really important. I think it's a human tendency to want to avoid. Tell you what, let's look at 139. This is a good one. Remove all thought. Do not waste your life and effort in other endeavors. So how many of y'all removed all thought today? Yeah. Okay, we got a couple liars in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have never been able to remove all thought. You know, I mean, I can remove thought temporarily, but, you know, the remove all thought thing, right? So, and I've noticed in the journals of some people getting a little frustrated about these instructions, like remove all thought. So I think I wanted to pause here and get your impression of what this really means for us. What does this really mean for you today and tomorrow? You know, remove all thought, do not waste your life and effort in other endeavors. What does this mean personally? Okay, George.
You know, and you've used this term before, busyness. Busyness is a distraction. It's a way that the ego keeps us involved in the world. And that's one thing I've recognized in my own life. I stay very, very busy. And I'm generally multitasking because I want to cram more in somehow. But so this quote to me is just pointing how anything other than the desire for liberation is really a waste. it really serves no good purpose ultimately.
Thank you. And Rayla, I saw your hand.
Thank you. Yeah. This is something that I especially struggled with today. Anna's having another manic episode thing. And I've noticed when I'm under that kind of pressure, which I should not be, because my inner stillness should be, but it does still affect me. What I've discovered is I'll be sitting there and I'm thinking, wait a minute, what am I doing? Oh my God, I'm lost in thought. Stop. No next, no past. Don't interpret the now. Just sit here in stillness. And I keep catching myself, and I find that on the days where I don't know how to express it other than feel more pressured because of her manic episodes, which puts, she tries to demand more from me, is how I interpret it. And then I feel stressed because I can't deliver, and I've yet to find that place where I can keep my inner stillness steady. I mean, it comes and goes when she's having her episodes, but I can't keep it yet. I can't keep it steady throughout her violent episode or whatever she's doing. I'm sorry, I think I just got off track, but my point was I've caught myself a lot lately, because she's having so much issues right now, caught myself a lot lately going, what am I doing? I was just thinking again. I'm trying so hard not to, you know, to find myself in a place of no next, no past, don't interpret now, just be. So I've become very aware of when I accidentally get lost in thought and catch myself. And sometimes I think it's hysterical because I'm like, oh my God, I just did it again. Anyway, I'm complete.
Yeah, thank you very much, Rayla. Let me read this again. Remove all thought. Do not waste your life and effort in other endeavors. What does this mean to you personally, Shauna?
To me, when I contemplated that quote, it was removing my concern about removing all thought and focusing on continually bringing my attention inward, continually returning inward, seeing everything in awareness, and that will take care of the thinking, will become quiet because of the practice.
Thank you. Anybody else want to share? And if you have your hand up somewhere and I don't see you, because there's two pages of y'all for me, so if I don't see your hand, just start speaking. Okay, I see Tony's hand. Go ahead, Tony. I heard you say so. Yes, you're on.
Okay, wasn't sure. I noticed in the last couple of days there's been waves of major contrast in my ability to be able to take in what's happening and being okay with it. And then today, for example, was very, very difficult for me at work. I just felt like when I have expectations, and I didn't realize this until just now, that it seems like I'm in a lot of resistance and I want things to go the way I want them to go. Last weekend I was invited to go with my daughter and two-year-olds shopping. And initially I felt like, what am I getting myself into? This is not going to be, you know, too much fun. But I decided that I don't know that, you know, I want to see what's going to happen. It was really a really enjoyable experience. And I was just very in the moment with everything that was going on. And then today at work, I felt like I was blindsided by these deeply hidden expectations from other coworkers, this one in particular. And I was extremely annoyed all day long. And normally I can just, you know, let it know what's there and be willing to let it pass. But today I was very verbal about it, and I surprised myself And then after I came home from work, I was in a lot of temporary judgment of how I had responded. And so it was just strange. But I think that the thought piece, feels like what's coming for me right now is that my expectations about an experience and how I'm able to either allow expectations to pass or to just be present with whatever is happening. It made a difference. I can see the major contrast this past week. So yeah, that's what I wanted to share.
Tell you what, since we're running a little low on time, let me just share a little bit from my point of view on this, and this isn't necessarily a right answer. I don't know if there is a right answer. It's just my point of view. For me, this quote means two things. Remember, I was asking you guys what it meant for you personally, so I'm really answering that same question, what it means for me personally. One of the things it means is continually shift to the observer. Because the observer has no thought. And, you know, I don't know how you guys experience it, but when my attention goes into my mind, I can feel it. At least I can now. I can feel it. You know, I say it's like a flashlight beam. And so as soon as I feel that, I just relax, release, and pay attention to experience again. And what I find is the thoughts, which are really, I've learned to call them daydreams. I don't even call them thoughts anymore because I don't think they even they don't deserve that much credit. They're too useless. So I call them daydreams. You know, the daydreams will go on all the time if I let my attention go forward. They just go on all the time, chatter, 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 but it's just all daydreams. It doesn't have anything to do with anything, right? It's not thinking about my work. It's not concentrating on my work. It's just bull. So what I find is that whenever that flashlight beam of attention goes forward in my head, and it always goes forward, to just relax and return to the direct experience of the moment. Just keep returning to that observer mode. And that to me is removing all thought. Now, it may be something I have to do, you know, 1,000 times a day, as the saying goes. But every time I do it, I'm removing all thought because I'm removing my attention from the thought mechanism. And then I have, this is my, these are my quotes today. I have my three quotes here, which I'm not going to read to you. You can see each one is quite lengthy. But I'm reading these quotes multiple times. But what I've written here on the page, you can see I have a little bit of handwriting there, a little scrawling. What I've written on the page is, what is a wasted life? What is a full life? What do I want? And to me, just keeping those questions in my mind motivates me to keep my focus on the practice. Right now, what's key is to meditate as long as I actually can in a particular day. Meditating as long as I actually can. Do you hear those words? Not pretending like I can only put in an hour when actually I could put in two, or pretending like I can only put in two when actually I could put in three, right? So I find that these three questions are really motivating me. What is a wasted life? What is a full life? And what do I want? And I won't answer the questions for you because you have to have your own answers. But again, remove all thought. Do not waste your life. Well, so in my humble opinion, not whoever wrote this, heck, I don't even know that person. In my humble opinion, what is a wasted life? What is a full life? Or we could say, what would be a complete life, maybe? And what do I want? I'm making my own decisions, right? About how I want to spend my day. Because it's really, whose life is it anyway? If I want to spend them at the bar getting drunk every night, then hallelujah. Go to the bar and get drunk. All right, well, we are out of time. So just keep doing what you're doing. And again, watch the daily contemplations for the which quotes to read on a particular day. And if you're following us a little bit by a few days, then just go to Gentle Healing Daily Contemplation and find the one that you're ready for there. And that way, you won't be contemplating too much. Like I said, when I slow you down on purpose. So feel free to be slowed down. All right. Thank you, everyone.